Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Fit Chat Chit Chat. I'm your host, Connor Reynolds, with my co-host, JP Fashone. JP, how you doing, sir?
Doing great. Doing great. Another day, another dollar, another PR. Just more athletes getting better. That's what we're after.
Let's go, dude. Have you seen a change in PRs with the new year and guys getting a little closer to high school, or at least, you know, their season, whether they're in high school or you had your college guys leaving, stuff like that? Are you noticing a difference in the atmosphere at all?
Definitely a difference in the atmosphere. I think for some guys, there's a little bit more anxiety, a little bit more tension as the season gets closer. But for the most part, guys are doing pretty well, like staying focused, understanding like things will come as the season actually starts. Not to press it right now, but I think what's been fun is like dudes coming back and like you can tell they've just busted their ass all fall. And like they took winter break and just got after it, and they come back and they're like, oh my God, I'm hitting the ball so much harder. It's like, yeah, you weigh like 5 pounds more than you did when you left. Like, that's crazy. So that's been good.
It's weird how that works.
Yeah, weird. Who'd have thought?
It's almost like someone came up with an equation called like force.
Right.
You had like mass and acceleration to get it.
Yeah.
Something. I don't know.
It's something. Yeah. Nerd stuff.
Witchcraft.
Yeah.
Dude, we've had a shit ton of PRs. Like, I think on the 14th, I counted it, and we had 16 different athletes PR in just the 14 days, even minus, like, I was gone for ABCA. So not even including, like, those days.
Yeah.
Dudes are getting after it, bro.
That's sick. You think part of that's just, like, them juiced up for the season? They're getting a little adrenaline going, they're ready to go.
Oh yeah. These are freaking amped, dude. We had I think all of my college guys PR'd, and I think everything before they left from their assessment. Had one guy up to 102.6, I think, and he started at like 89. So that was crazy.
That's awesome.
We actually had one of my guys, his name's Liam. He goes to North Park in Chicago, and he was the one that, we talked off camera about. I was getting a few guys that one or our rotation was down, rotation acceleration, but then two, when we'd be going off the machines, like they were constantly feeling like they were on time, yet we're missing it, and we were missing it. Our barrel was stuck like behind. And so our chest would be here, barrel back here, and then they'd be late and like, I don't know why I'm late. And so I was looking at it, and from the pitcher, they were getting very much this way versus this way. And with Liam, I was like, you know, like, let's try this out. And so I told him, I go, I want the pitcher to read more of your barrel. I go, right now, we're a lot of in cap. I want that pitcher to be able to read your barrel there versus there. And then his rotation skyrocketed. Timing got a lot better. And so I was like, all right, like, let's take this theory. And I have one other kid that massively gets caught like that. I have a few others that are close-ish, but I have one other guy. And his, like, rotational acceleration, like, wouldn't get over, like, 4 or 5. Like,
couldn't do it.
Here, let me, I'll pull out like that kind of stuff right here. So, average rotation 1.8, 3.5, 3.6, 4.1, 3.3, 4.3, 4.4. Yeah, so, like, literally, like, and maxes, 5.5, 5.5, 5.9, 5.7, 4.5, 5.7, 5.3. And then we make this adjustment, and he goes average rotation, 6.6, 7 in those last two sessions with his max going to 9.5, and then he got 10.2 today.
Hey. It's a double digits. Let's go.
It was, and it's been one thing where I've been looking at it, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I am a self-proclaimed, like, rotational acceleration king, and I just can't get this one guy's up. And so I was like, you know what? And so that's been really good for not just the players, but also me of going like, oh, that's all that was happening. Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Those are always the best as a coach. Like, oh, that was easy. How did I miss that?
That's all I had to do. And so that was good. And yeah, man, it's been fun being able to kind of work with those college guys. Now they're gone though, so it's like back to the high school guys.
Back to the high school girl end. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
But do you have a rabbit hole that we can kind of go down today?
I do. It's a little different rabbit hole. Getting into kind of the back end stuff a little bit more, instead of the hitting thing. So let me share my screen. All right. Good to go?
Yes, sir.
Can we see that? All right. Cool. Good.
Money, sir.
Sick. Okay. So today, I thought I'd talk a little bit about kind of like the process that we've taken to get to the report that we're at and kind of generating some actual tangible, actionable data and kind of what that process looks like on the back end. So how can we use biomechanics to help hitters, right? Hitting is a very, very complicated task, a lot of variables to take into consideration, and biomechanics has a lot of different variables and a lot of different metrics and markers, things that we can look at. There's an unlimited amount of data points that you can pull from biomechanics readings. So how do we sift through all of that and come up with a way that we can find actionable data that we can give to the coaches, give to the athletes, and they can take it and use it to get better? And a lot of that has to do with, like, A, we have to be able to do science with it, right? We have to be able to just look at the data and not just make assumptions, but actually be able to do a little bit of research, stuff that I kind of hand off to people a lot smarter than me to do. But we can't just do science with it, right? That's going to take way too long. And realistically, our R&D sports scientists, as great as they are, they're not going to know as much about hitting as our hitting coaches. So how do we kind of bridge that gap between the two? And a lot of that has to do with just opening up a discussion between the biomechanists, sports scientists, and our hitting coaches, and kind of using these two different data types, qualitative data and quantitative data. So qualitative being like your experience as a hitting coach, things that you've noticed, things that you've seen, things that, you know, kind of old school hitting coaches kind of put their hat on, of my experience plays. I understand how hitting works because I've just seen a lot of hitting. And there is a lot of value in that. I think there's a lot of things that hitting coaches know that we might not be able to measure yet. And so we kind of take that together with the quantitative data, the actual data that we use to do data analytics, science with, and we kind of combine those two. So working with the sports scientists, you know, kind of the hitting coach's job was to take that qualitative data and find a way to formulate some sort of hypothesis from it. So an easy example would be something like, this guy maintains space really well. Well, Every hitting coach, for the most part, knows what I'm talking about. I can't measure that, right? That's a really hard thing to measure. How do you measure how well somebody's maintaining space? Well, I can't just go to a biomechanist and say, I want to measure how well somebody maintains space. Because A, they're going to have no idea what I'm talking about, right? They're not hitting coaches. They don't understand what maintaining space means. And that's a really broad topic. Where are we going to look for that? Right? Where can I point them in the direction of like, hey, I think we could measure it like this. So it's our job as hitting coaches to take something like maintaining space or posture and find a way with the little bit of biomechanical knowledge that we do have to make that into a hypothesis. So something along the lines of, I think we could measure space based on the distance between the pelvis and the torso when they're in forward bend, something like that, right? now the data scientists and the biomechanists can take that hypothesis, dig into the data, and either find something or find a better way to measure it on their own. The other side of the coin is the researchers, biomechanists. They're looking at the data kind of constantly running correlations. They're looking at different data trends for different athletes. And they can come to us with, hey, there's a correlation between X and Y. Do you guys think that has a value? Do you think that that's something we should look into further? Or does that not really matter? Is this just kind of a fluke of a correlation and we shouldn't put any time into researching it further? So starting to bridge that gap between the two of qualitative information and quantitative information to find something that's actually tangible for the coaches and the athletes. And so it can start with something as easy as like, hey, we've done KVEST before. We have a lot of research with KVEST data. So something like X-factor stretch. We have a pretty good idea of what X-factor stretch looks like in a KVEST graph. So using that and then moving towards, okay, how do we show that in a biomechanics report, in a motion capture? Is it different? Is it the same? Is there more information we can gain from a motion capture report? For example, like in a motion capture, we can look at different types of hip-shoulder separation and not just the one that KVEST gives us. So we can dig into it a little bit more. Or something like the graph on the right where we have max arm speed and bat speed at contact. And we can see a slight correlation between the two. And so a biomechanist would bring this to us and say, hey, there's a slight correlation here. Why do you guys think that is? What other questions can we ask based on this? So if higher arm speed relates to bat speed, which we think is important, how do we explain that? Or what other things can we do to kind of sift through the gray area of just correlation and actually get to causation? And then on the other side, we can watch a lot of hitters all day, and we can take a guy and say that, hey, I'm seeing a lot of hitters with this problem, right? The guy's not maintaining posture very well. Or I see guys' bat move like this quite often. How can we measure that? What are things that we can look towards to try and quantify that and then put it into our report to get a little bit more information to the athlete about it? The other thing we can do as hitting coaches is dig into the visual 3D files, dig into the biomechanical data as best we can, and say something like, hey, I've looked at five athletes' motion captures. These are some data points that I've picked out as a grouping. I can group these five athletes based on this torso position or this pelvic movement or these ground force indicators. Is that something that we see in the larger data set, or is this just kind of a one-off example of a flaw that I've seen in the past? And so now I can hand that off to a sports scientist. He can dig into the larger data set and see if there are trends or if this is just kind of a fluke or something I'm kind of seeing into the data, right? Trying to make assumptions from it. And when we get all of that together, it's really easy to get lost in movement, right? Movement's so easy to get lost into because hitting is a complicated thing. How humans move is really complicated. So everything we do has to go back to how do we get this athlete to produce more on the field? Well, for us, this boils down to the big three. So bat speed, bat to ball skills, and swing decisions. Whatever biomechanical insights we have, if they don't relate to one of these things, then it's really hard for us to say that if these things improve or if he hits this biomechanical marker or this measurement, then he's going to perform better on the field. If we can't relate it to he swings the bat faster, it's going to make him create better contact, or it's going to make him have better swing decisions. So that's kind of where the science comes in, right? We can have all these theories, we can have all these insights, but if it doesn't help the athlete on the field, it's not really valuable. And so when we put all that together and we kind of all come together with these ideas of what's important and what's valuable, we can kind of put together a report. So things like hip-shoulder separation, things like torso and pelvis positions, bat metrics, and put that all together in a nice little neat report with some research behind it that we can give to the athlete that they can understand and digest and that coaches can use to continue to train our hitters a little bit better. So kind of sifting through all the data, using the experience from the coaches, using the insights from our sports scientists, helps us get a little bit closer to something that's tangible, usable, and easily digestible for the athlete.
Damn.
Cool.
Question.
Yeah.
Not related to any of that. What is that guy's attack angle average that was in the slow
probably in that slide? I could look it up, but very low.
Sorry to jump away from what you're just talking about.
Nope.
That's one of the things that I've always done, but have been trying to do a lot more of is like guessing. Mm-hmm. And I know for some people that are like listening, they're going, what? He's guessing. I'll like watch the swing of the athlete and then I'll try and guess from what I just saw what the numbers on Blast Motion are all going to be and then hit tracks. And yep. So I saw that swing and I was like, ooh, I wonder what his attack angle is. I like saw it and I was like, ooh, I feel like he's going to have a lower attack angle.
Yeah. And that's exactly like essentially the process of kind of how we've gone about this is like, I watch this dude swing. I'm kind of guessing what his biomechanics are going to look like. And sometimes I'm wrong and I kind of learn from it. I'm like, oh, that's not really what I saw. And sometimes you're right. And I think the more we've gone through this, the better we've gotten at kind of predicting different things. And that helps kind of the sports scientists and the biomechanists to be able to kind of confidently say some things about hitting, even though their hitting knowledge might not be elite, right? They can still kind of be pretty confident in what they're saying because we as hitting coaches are like, oh, yeah, like I see this all the time. And I'm normally right about it.
It's a weird world that we're in where, you like you mentioned in the slide, the qualitative versus quantitative. Mm-hmm. Like, I like how you mentioned how the, am I pronouncing that right? Qualitative?
Yep.
So with, like you said, old school coaches are more qualitative, using the experience, using that almost like internal hard drive of knowledge of, all right, I've seen, you know, thousands of swings. That swing kind of looks like this swing. What we did with this swing, we might do this. And then you have the quantitative, which is actually having hard data and being able to combine those two. I think we've mentioned it with all these hitters that are going through and getting used to using the technology and then being able to use both of those in hand. It's a weird transition period. I feel like we're in one that,
yeah.
I don't know, I haven't been around other transition periods in this game, so I might just be speaking out of my ass, but I feel like this is like the big like takeover, like, you know, that big middle ground. And I feel like here in the next few years, it's just going to take off.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's something we've discussed in past podcasts. It's just like old school hitting coaches still being valuable. Like the qualitative stuff, the experience is incredibly valuable. But if we can measure something like maintaining space, or we can measure what it means to maintain posture, it allows us to now be a little bit more critical about our training protocols. Is this actually helping this athlete maintain space? Is it actually helping him maintain posture? Rather than just kind of guessing and then visually being like, yeah, he hits better.
Have you seen the movie Trouble with the Curve?
I have not.
My life story. But hey, there was a part in it where Clint Eastwood, he was the scout. And do you know the premise? I'm just going to go through it. So essentially, there was a scout, and I think they were like kind of kicking him out. He was older or whatever. And this other scout had this, I can't remember if he was a high school or college guy, but he's like on everybody's boards as like the top draft pick, right? And so they go through, and this coach, Clint Eastwood, the scout, is driving through and is trying to find, like, these good hitters. He went and saw this kid, and he didn't really like him too much. And then as he's driving back, he finds this fucking, like, waiter or some shit at a restaurant. And he's like, ooh, can you throw? And all of a sudden, the kid's just diamond the rough kind of thing. But there was a moment where Clint Eastwood, the scout, was watching this supposedly all-good hitter, and he noticed that there was a hitch with his hands, and he's like, he can't hit the curveball, i.e. trouble with the curve. But essentially, it was him not having any quantitative data and just looking at it and saying, there's something wrong with that, he won't be able to hit a curve. Well, no one would believe him. And then when I think they brought this kid on to, like, Yankee, like, stadium to hit, and so he brought the waiter out, and they were like, oh, he's going to hit off this kid. And then the kid just threw curveball after curveball after curveball after curveball. Dude couldn't hit. They end up drafting the lefty pitcher. But essentially, I mean, same thing. The dude just went through, didn't have the data in front of him, and said, boom, this kid won't be able to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, how much easier, and not even easier, just, like, more confident could a scout be if he was like, okay, I see that, let me go to this thing. Okay, now I can confirm it. Now it's easier to convince his boss, like, hey, we can't draft this guy. You know, now everybody's on the same page.
And I think once this game can get to that point, I think it's going to take some time. I mean, we have Jeff Fry, who's been booted off Twitter, yet his grandson apparently has an account.
Getting after it.
So, as we're recording, it is January 18th. I went to my first ABCA.
Yes, you did.
Popped the
cherry. Yes, you did. Popped the cherry. Nashville, too. Bro. Nashville.
Son, let's go.
Yeah.
Dude, it was a blast, man. Like,
yeah.
It was, like, so much fun. And I was talking to Cole about it yesterday, our pitching guy here at FAST. It was his first one, too. And I was just chatting with him because I was like, you know, like, I'm planning on going on a vacation in March. And he's like, another vacation? I was like, what vacation are you referring to? And he's like, dude, we were just in Nashville. I was like, if you think that was a vacation, like, I don't know what you're doing. I was like, because Jason wore, like, a thing that tracks it. Dude, minimally, we walked 6 miles, like, 3 days in a row, 4 days in a row. Literally, like, nonstop, like, talking. Like, nonstop, just meeting people, talking about different products. And I was like, dude, that is not, like, was I in heaven? Yes. Yeah. Was I on vacation? No.
No.
And he's like, well, you like, we went out to bars and stuff like that. I was like, I go, I need to be on a beach. I need to, like, not have a phone. I need to, like, not have anything planned today. I need to have not anything planned tomorrow. The only thing I want to worry about, where am I getting dinner? Because that big thing, where am I getting dinner? And then where can I get some brunch? Like, those are the only two things on a vacation I, like, plan or schedule. The rest is like, hey, we flow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's work. Especially if you're going to do, like, the whole thing. Like, it is work. Yeah. Yeah. Dude. That's it. Favorite talk.
Didn't go to a single one.
Nice. Favorite booth.
Now, and I'll elaborate on it. All of the talks are on the website. So, like, I can just log in and watch all of them up. Yet when I was walking around, like, I can't meet those people in person. And so literally, Jason, Hirsch, the owner here at FAST, he's like, dude, this is like my fifth one. Like, don't go to a talk. And then John Lampros, with 2-5 baseball. It was the first time I was able to meet him. He's been on this podcast a couple different times. Really good listens. Go back. If you don't know who he is, go back and listen to our past podcast. And he's one of my favorite people in the hitting world. And he said the same thing. He's like, dude, don't go to a single one. Like, just network. Like, I met Tewksbury. That was wild. Finally was able to meet John. Still can't pronounce his last name. Stamaramos?
Stauderopoulos?
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 Jesus, dude. Yeah, can't pronounce that. Finally met him. Finally met Dudo. I met, do you know Coach Ferb?
Mm-hmm.
So, met him. Met Manny Ramirez. Yeah, dude. I was walking to go find Cole and Jason, and John had just sent me a message. It was like, I was like, hey, like, let me know where your plans are. Let's go grab lunch or something here in a little bit. And he's like, all right, we'll do. Coming off of a high, just took a picture with Manny Ramirez. I was like, what? And I immediately started calling. I was like, where are you? Where are you? I need to know right now. And like I said, I was trying to find Cole. So Cole was standing on like the end cap, and I was phoned down, like texting John, like, where are you? And I walked by him, and then he goes out of nowhere. You turned around and was like sprinting, because John had told me, he goes, I think they're closing the line to take pictures. And dude, I was on a sprint. I was like, I need to meet this man. Cause like,
only
baby. Like, Manny Ramirez is like, I love Manny Ramirez. Like, it would probably be, and I thought of another dude earlier, and I can't remember. Oh, Gronkowski, Ramirez, and I just had the third one, Marshawn Lynch. Those are, like, my three favorite, like, just people, bro.
Yeah,
and, like, I had to meet him, dude. And then I was so awkward. So it was at 44 Gloves. It was at their booth, uh-huh. Right? And so they give you a glove to, like, hold in the photo. Well,
yeah.
They had given it to me, and I naturally
put it on.
Left hand, right?
Yeah.
Well, we go to take the picture, and my hand is behind Manny. So then I was like, oh, shit. Like, I don't want to get in trouble. So what am I thinking? But I was like, oh no. So if the mic is Manny and we're taking the picture that way, I reach around and I whisper in his ear, like, I'm so sorry. And they were taking pictures the whole time. So I have just pictures of me, like,
just a hugging Manny Ramirez.
And the whole time he's like,
what are you doing? What is this white guy doing?
And then, like, when I met him, I go, hi, Manny. I'm Connor Reynolds. And he, like, stopped. And this was a common thing with all these, like, you know, high social media, like, look at me. And it's like them trying to remember, like, who I am. And I wanted to be like, dude, you don't know me. Like, you don't. We've never met. If we did, I wouldn't expect you to remember. Like,
right.
Dude, I'm a nobody, bro. Nobody. But it was a blast. I met Eugene. I met Nick Osborne, who's been on the podcast. He's from 108. So it was good to finally, like, meet him in person. I saw an old coach of mine from Garden who's working at TrackMan now. So that was wild. I saw an old teammate from Canada, my buddy Rudy, who's, like, I haven't seen in forever. And then out of nowhere, he's a coach at Trinidad State.
Oh, no way.
It's like, what the fuck are you doing here? And so, dude, it was just an absolute blast. I think I was third or fourth on Driveline's Exavilo record for Smash Factor. Unfortunately, Brooks' bitch Benson was in front of me, so fuck you, Brooks. No, dude, it was an absolute blast, and it was one of those where, like, for me, more than anything, like, I love the content side of what I've been doing and what we've been doing for a while. Like, I love it. I love doing it. But it's also one of those where, like, I don't, like, walk around the grocery store and get recognized. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not that I want to get recognized at something like that, but, like, it's one of those where it's like, there hasn't been that extra, like, push. You know what I mean? There hasn't been any external factors to add into, ooh, I wanted to do this. Like, I've been doing all this content stuff because I enjoy doing it. Like, I've been recording every lesson that I've done over the last, like, 2.5 years, editing it, putting it on YouTube. For fun. Like, I mean, it's for my athletes, but it's just, that was the first time, like, walking around going, like, I could get noticed. And not like I need to be noticed, but like if I work hard enough and put myself in the right position and do the right things, I can get noticed.
Yeah.
And that was like, that was a switch for me. That was like a really cool environment to be in. I think there was like 9,000 coaches there.
Yeah. Wild. Wild. Yeah. And like you said, the best part about it is just like, it's just meet people you haven't seen in years. Like, baseball's a small world, but that's sick. I mean, just like you said, it's not like I want to get noticed, but I would imagine it gave some like clarity to like, okay, this is kind of what the goal could be type of
thing. Oh yeah. And sure. It's like, not necessarily like it's one of those like byproducts, you know what I mean? Like, if I go crazy in the gym, my bat speed's going to go up. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not in the gym to increase your bat speed, but because you're increasing your, you know, mass and your strength, you're then going to increase your bat. Like, I see the bat speed as the notoriety or, like, being able to be recognized and being in the gym as putting in the work. Like, by me doing more work there, it will then thus allow me to then, you know, and so, and I don't even like, I almost like working in the shadows, but then it's also like when you're around other people that work in the shadows, I don't want to be in the shadows of them. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be in the shadows of people that are already in the shadows. Right. I want to be in the shadows to normal people and then be able to be, like, not noticed, but vindicated. Like,
yeah,
verified. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, that dude gets after it. That dude does some good shit.
Yeah, yeah. Like that. And yeah. I don't want the, and I don't know, I feel like I'm repeating myself because I don't want anybody to, like, hear this and go, like, oh, he does this to be noticed. I want to be so good at what I do, I am noticed, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be the top of the field. Like, we want to be just head down grinding, and you look up, and you're like, oh, I'm the best?
Damn. Oh, shit.
Like, sick.
That's crazy.
That was crazy. This is not what I was going for, but cool.
There was one booth, and I want to get what your thoughts are on this. It was the Louisville Slugger sports lab or science lab. I can't remember what they call it, but do you know what I'm referring to?
A little bit.
So I can send over their thing to you, but they have what caught my eye, and there was lots of these, but it was literally like the third booth I saw. Like, it took me forever just to make one loop because I just stopped at like every booth. Like, tell me more. Like,
yeah.
Cut my head open, dump it in, throw it back. Let's go to the next booth. So I'm walking by and they have this TV and essentially it looks like the motion capture lab, but they have iPhones around. So I go, okay, let me learn more. And so the guy's going through, doesn't talk about the motion capture like at all. I was like, all right, well, this is all I'm wanting to talk about. But he has me get on these force plates. And it was just like a matte force plate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I type in all my information, and he goes, all right, take your shoes off. I just want you to stand there, okay? So I'm just standing. And he looks at my feet pattern, and apparently I was very, like, pinky dominant.
Okay.
And so right away they go, all right, well, we have these shoes with these insoles. This would, like, offset that, neutralize, do this, do that. And he goes, okay. And then it auto-generates a shit ton of just drills for me to work on this, right? But then I get in, and he goes, all right, I want you to get in your stance now. So I get into my stance. It's not there anymore. I don't have the pinky dominant. I'm level. From what I've given you, what are your thoughts? What are your initial, if you were in my shoes, what's going through your brain? Because I immediately had like judgment. Now, good judgment, bad judgment, or whatever, but like just immediately I was like,
So you put the insoles in, got your stance.
They just said, this is what we have or would suggest. And then still not wearing any shoes, no soles, again to my stance, neutralizes.
Everything. My first thought is people are generally bad at standing. Like, people are just bad at standing, and so they put themselves in weird positions. Versus when you're in your stance, a little bit more athletic, we're ready to move, we're going to balance everything out, we're going to be kind of in the ground, we're going to get really grounded. That's kind of my first impression.
Yeah, so essentially I sat there, and I was like, okay, like, you had me stand, then you gave me drills to do, then you had me get in my stance.
Right.
And in my head, I'm like, well, I'm not going to be standing when I hit. I'm going to be in my stance when I hit. So why give me all these populated drills to correct something that in my stance doesn't need to be corrected?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Sounds like just bad science, right? If you're going to do like an assessment and then a reassessment, you should probably do the same assessment.
Yeah. And that's where, and they didn't even give me drills once I was in my stance. It only auto-populated drills when I was standing there. And so like for me, I was like, I like the idea.
Same.
The execution I'm questioning. And so that was the one that I was like, I'm not sure about that. The dude was nice. So there was that. But I mean, that was like the only one that I was like, I don't agree.
Seems weird. Yeah.
But I mean, there were a bunch of force plate, motion capture, every type of back company was down there. We had, let's see here. There was one bat weight that I really liked, and I'll send you a picture of it. I should have brought it with me. But essentially, it's just like a long, like, you know, the when you go to the store and you get some produce and you get a bag, and then you have those like zip tie thingies that you take,
okay,
like zip
twist.
So yeah. Imagine that, but weighted.
Okay.
So essentially,
so it's like a flexible weight.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so what they did is you would take your bat and then you could wrap it, and it had this material to like make it not as slippery, but you could wrap it like anywhere on the bat. So you could wrap it on the knob and get a little underload. You could wrap it on the barrel. You could wrap it on handle, like lots of options. And I really liked that. I'm still playing around with it. And they had different weights for it. But I think that was the one where I was like, I really like that. Because for me, I've used the hitting. Have you ever used hitting jackets?
I've seen them. I've seen other people use them.
So about 4 years ago when I was at Bardo's, throwback.
Throwback.
I was going to do a bat speed training experiment with the hitting jackets. If I had like five guys only use hitting jackets all the time, and then five guys who didn't use hitting jackets ever.
Sure.
Now, using high schoolers, they fucking lose shit and forget shit all the time. So the study essentially became a wash. But what I had happened was I've had multiple blast motion sensors get broken, because the only way to take off the hitting jacket is to
slam it on the ground.
You forget that you get that you have the sensor on.
Yep.
Blast motion dead. Well, with this, you just wrap.
Right.
And so I really like that, and I like the versatility of it. Like I said, I'll send you some pictures. And anybody interested, if you guys were to go to my YouTube, I actually did a post ABCA, like, what did I get? So everything that I got that's in my bag, I did a video on, a little breakdown on, if you guys want to go check that out. But I'll even put it as a separate podcast on here. I'll upload that, so that way it'll be on this this channel. But yeah, that was like the only other thing. There was another bat weight that was essentially like two pieces, and you would have to like screw in the two pieces.
Okay.
I didn't mind that. It was really sturdy, but the time that it took to unscrew, and with two bolts, you have to unscrew both bolts to get another bat weight, heavier or lighter, and then do the whole process again. It was just going to take too much. Outside of that, like, it was really freaking cool, man, just being able to walk around, see all the cool people. I'm pissed at Jason right now because he never introduced me to Bodhi. He was there playing chess. They talked to him. We went to the driveline cocktail hour. He was there, talked with a bunch of people. Oh, you're in trouble, bro.
What do we got? What do I do now? What do I do now?
So, talking to Dudo.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
He talked to you about it?
He told me about that. Yeah.
What he said?
I swear I've told him before. He was like, yeah, dude, I didn't even know you did a podcast. I was like, Dudo, we've talked about this. He was like, nah, there's no way.
Bro, so we're sitting there. We're sitting on the wall. I retweeted his stuff. I tweeted at him and stuff, but I've never like met him. So me and we're sitting there, and like, I mean, I use you all the time. You're my icebreaker. So I'm like, JP? And he's like, yeah, I work next to him. I'm like, yeah, I know. That's how I meet people at your company. I go, yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah. I've known JP. And then a few seconds later, I go, yeah, like we do a podcast together. And he goes, what? Yeah, like we have a podcast. And he goes, you're joking, right? I go, no. I'm like, and he goes, how often? And I go, weekly? What? And he's like, how long? And I was like, well, I've been doing Chit Chat a couple years, but I think JP's been on 5 months, so he hasn't said a word to me. It was just pretty funny. And then he, like, goes over to Stokely, and he's like, hey, Stokely, did you know JP does a podcast? And so he's like, yeah, I do.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see if we can get Mr. Max Dudo on here. He's awesome to talk to. He's got some great stories, and just, honestly, like, just super smart.
Dude, he's very, very intellectual.
Yes, very cerebral. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
It was really cool, man. And so it was just like a really cool moment. One of those where it's like, all right, like now one, I know what I'm going to be doing the first week or so of January every year. It makes the holiday so much longer, dude.
Oh, it does.
From Thanksgiving to ABCA, like that's a wild,
yeah.
Wild time.
Yeah. That's awesome. I'm glad you got to go. Glad you got to experience. Really bummed I missed it, but hopefully next year I'll be there. We can go.
We'll put in your contract.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'll be your agent.
Yeah.
Let's go. ABCA, not in the cards.
Be like, not in the cards.
Doesn't work out. I'm like, is JP willing to take a pay cut? I'll be like, yep. Yes, he is.
I'm going to be making minimum wage, but I'm going to ABCA, baby.
Bro, you'd probably be your better agent. I was going to say you would work for free just to go.
Just to go. Exactly. Yeah. Well, but we'll see what next year holds.
It's in Dallas.
it's in Dallas. A lot of things can change in 12 months, as we both know.
Hopefully, I might be in Washington or Arizona. Hopefully, maybe. Who knows? Who knows? Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Oh yeah.
Any closing arguments there, JP?
No. Be nice to each other. That's all I got.
Be nice to each other. I love it. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in. You guys can find me, fast_RBI for everything. Gonna be pulling out a bunch more content. I've been talking about it for a while, the PVR numbers. I finally started diving into those heavy today. Was able to start getting caught up on all my videos that I've been delaying the last couple weeks. So getting those up. And so now we're finally getting into the weeds of the PVR numbers. And so hopefully that'll be coming out here in the next like week or two, and we'll be putting out a lot of stuff. And I'm also going to start doing highlights of all my players on Instagram. And then hopefully we're going to be getting OnForm, which is a video analyzing app that also does skeletons. So hopefully we'll be getting that here soon. And once we get that, I'll be able to do side-by-side and also overlay comparisons, which I'm ecstatic about. So really excited for that. Where can the people find you there, JP?
JP.Fasone on Instagram. I've been posting more on Instagram. We're really working at that, so we're getting that popping. And then JP.Fasone1 on Twitter. So all the biomechanics and just random thoughts that I have go on Twitter.
And then we go down the rabbit hole here.
Down the rabbit hole here. So get it all.
Thank you everybody for tuning in. Hopefully you guys had a good time listening. And until next week, have a good one.
Later.